Welcome to the Ruthlessly Efficient Marketing Podcast. I'm James and I'm here with my ruthlessly efficient marketing expert colleague, Gary Lee.
Good afternoon. I don't know why I say afternoon. It could be morning or day or night or anything by the time you listen to this. But there you go. It's afternoon for us.
Whatever time of day it is for you, we hope it's a good one. We are both from 33%. We are focused on helping you master your marketing as quickly and efficiently as possible so that you can keep on running your amazing business. And this week, we've got a couple of different things we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about efficiency, how we keep that efficiency going. We're 3 weeks into our 8-week efficiency challenge. We're going to catch up with how that's going so far. And we've got week four, some more actionable tips that you can take away to help make you more organized and more efficient. We're also going to be talking about how you maintain the spike that's coming from that pent-up demand. Everywhere's been shut for so long. It's going to be open very soon. You're going to be able to go to the shops again. We're going to be able to go and sit out in a pub garden, have something to eat with some friends that we haven't seen for a long time. So people are excited about that. How can you make sure not only that you capture as many of those people as possible, but that you keep them coming back long into the future? So we've got loads and loads to talk about today. Shall we start, Gary, with efficiency?
Well, I mean, it really needs you to start. How is it going? Update everybody on the project. And last week was all about de-stressing yourself. So do you feel like you've had a de-stress week and you're more efficient as a result?
It's a cyclical thing, isn't it, I think? I think the more organized you become, the less stressed you are. So much of my stress is caused by disorganization. I think that is true. That, like, the things that wind me up the most are often the caused by me not being on top of stuff, or me forgetting about things, or me missing stuff, or not being able to find something. And I think that's a really key part of it. Yeah, it really has built over the course of the last 4 weeks. With starting off with getting your email organized, that made a massive difference. Then really structuring your day, that's one of the things that I've always found difficult to do, and I wouldn't say I've got it nailed yet. I really am trying, but I think that's the thing about all of this is it is the act of constantly trying. I don't know how it is for you, but I feel like disorganization, inefficiency is always there waiting at the door to sort of creep its way back in again.
Absolutely. And if I'm honest, it normally manifests itself most when your week is messed up for some reason. So for example, we're all on a shorter week, probably most of you. So, you know, maybe you're not working Friday, maybe you've got a few days off next week because of Easter. As a result, you're still trying to do the same stuff, but in a short space of time. So even I'm definitely finding that I'm suddenly going, I mean, we talked about it earlier. Well, have I posted this? Have I done this yet? Well, everything feels a little bit more, and then that brings the stress because it just puts more pressure on your organisation.
Yeah, you really do have that. You know, those are the times when you've really got to nail it down in terms of what you're going to get done. But again, as you've talked before about, then you have to be realistic about what can be achieved. If you're in a shorter week, then what's going to go? Something has got to give, or you're going to have to work longer hours. But then if you're going to work longer hours, what's the point in having a holiday in the first place? So really, you do have to look at those. That's when we come on to figuring out what are the things that you need to do and what are the things that can...
Yes, prioritisation. We'll save that for another week, though.
Almost certainly. So yeah, that was it. And I think, you know, and again, staying calm. That was something that I think I have always been not someone that gets too wound up about stuff all of the time. But nevertheless, I think that it does seem to be going in a circle. So for me, it's been about trying to stay on top of it, just trying to keep going back to that email box. I've watched that email box start to creep back up again, and I've brought it back down again and got that well in line. And I know now, and it's funny, I had an actual conversation this week with somebody where they were like, I've sent you this thing. And I was like, you haven't. I know you haven't, because I'm absolutely on top of my inbox. And I was really, I was, you know, it was actually quite liberating to know that I was beyond reproach in that particular example. So I found that to be a really valuable part of the process. All right, so stay tuned to the end of the show when Gary will be talking us through week four. What can we be doing next? Now that we're organised in our inbox, we've planned our days, we're feeling super zen. Surely that's it. There can't be any more. But there's still 5 more things to learn on the road to peak efficiency. So I'm excited to hear what they are. But this week, what's our main topic? We're going to be talking about how you maintain the spike that's coming from the pent-up demand. So where are we, Gary? As time of recording, we're a couple of weeks away, aren't we?
We are less than 2 weeks away, 11 days to be precise. Not that we're counting, because as you said, we are one of those people that is eagerly booked. We have a group of friends. We're all booked in for the first night. Well, second night, I suppose, we're booked in for. But we've already booked two nights.
Yeah.
We've already booked the first 2 weeks worth of alfresco dining to get people together. So there is, I'd imagine we're not the only ones. A load of people will have booked. They'll be all eager. Everything's booked and ready to go. And
you're going to be out there in the rain.
Charging into the shops.
Whatever's happening.
Yeah, the snow. Is, yeah. But as we record, we are being told we might have snow on Monday.
Who cares? People are going to be going to the pub. That's going to be happening. And, you know, yeah, it's exciting. I mean, it's exciting. Something incredibly normal is
yes.
suddenly exciting.
It feels like going on holiday, doesn't
you know,
it?
Like being able to go. And again, the shops being open again, it's an exciting prospect of, you know, just not having quite so many of those little brown boxes arriving through the door every day and being able to actually go to a shop. And I think that's something that, you know, something that people are excited about. And I'm certainly, everywhere I look, I'm seeing a lot of anticipation and excitement about able to get back to a bit of a semblance of normality. And we're still not there yet. I know you still can't go indoors. There's a lot of things you still can't do, but the things that you can, I think people are going to want to take part in. And we're seeing a lot of stats suggesting that there's going to be a big, big run on people booking and getting involved and wanting to go out, especially going out to eat. I think that's a massive thing.
Yes, absolutely.
So with all that excitement, it should be high fives all round. Let's get excited. Phil, there we go. There was a virtual high five. Stack out your tables. Get as many people as you possibly can in. You know, just milk it for all that it's worth. But I would say that's possibly not the right strategy.
I mean, no. Part of the problem is if you milk it for all it's worth, that means you'll try and pile as many people in as possible, and that's one of the things you probably need to avoid. Because what you'll do is you'll lessen the experience. If you throw too many people in, first of all, people might not feel comfortable, because that's a thing. You know, people are going to feel a bit weird when they're first going out. I think anybody who went out in November, I think it was, when there was that short period where we could go again. You know, we went out once and it was great because there was, you know, big spacing and everything else. But even I, and I'm pretty relaxed about the things, if we'd had loads of people sitting on top of us, wouldn't have felt too comfortable.
Yeah,
so
no.
You want, and ultimately, this all links into the experience, because the thing that you've got to really go for is make this an amazing experience. Because what we're saying here is you don't need to get takeaways if you're a restaurant, or you don't need to order from Amazon or wherever else those brown boxes are coming from. You can actually go and experience it. And there's the experience of being offline. And that's what offline always has a challenge ever since the internet was created, really, was how do you battle convenience versus an experience? And that is something that really has to be at the forefront of everyone's minds, rather than just maximizing 2 or 3 weeks. You've got to think of the next 2 or 3 months, the next 2 or 3 years, really.
Yeah, we've got this situation right now where it's, you know, you don't know what you have till it's gone. We've had this thing taken away from us and we haven't been able to do it. So we want to do it more than we ever have before. We've forgotten about pretty much every negative experience we've ever had when we've been out at a restaurant or a shop or anything like that. And now we only think about the good stuff, and we've got an opportunity. And I think that's something that, you know, retail, hospitality, leisure have an opportunity to sort of start, you know, wipe the slate clean and start again. But the second you go in and you get a bad service from a, you know, from a restaurant, you get a surly shop staff member doesn't help you when you're trying to find something in a store. Or, as you said before, if a place is not properly set up, if you do feel uncomfortable, I certainly went to a couple of places during the break last year. And I thought, this isn't very well organised, this isn't very well set up. And it made me feel super uncomfortable. I didn't have a nice time and I didn't want to go back for absolute certain. And that's a big part of it. So you've got to give people an amazing experience. Make sure they walk away thinking, yes, that was I was right to be excited about that. It was brilliant. I remember what it was like to do that and I want to go back again. And I felt comfortable and everything.
And thinking about it, actually, it just dawned on me that what we're going to do immediately, as soon as we're allowed to go out again, is a prime example, because this is a place we all went to just before, it was, I think it was the end of November, wasn't it?
It was the end of Christmas.
And we went there and we had an amazing experience. We had a really good night out. Food was really good. The staff were really good. They made it, you know, they made it feel like a special occasion. And even the being outside in a tent with a fire pit.
It was freezing cold.
That didn't put us off. The whole experience was, and the second we said, right, okay, let's get ourselves booked for something, we didn't think of anywhere else. That was immediately the thought, well, we know that place. We know it's a good experience. We know that they'll treat it well. They'll be sensitive to everybody's feelings and everything else. It was just like straight back. And that's where a prime example of, they focused on, they didn't part, they could, I'm sure they could have got more people in than they did.
Yeah, for sure.
But they focused on, let's get a really good experience. So when those guys come back, you know, as soon as they're allowed back, because at that point we knew that it wasn't long before they were going to put another ban in place, that they've got us. Oh, I was about to say they've got us for life. I'm sure they haven't got us for life. Although probably you,
very close to my house. So yeah,
But for the rest of us, you know, it's quite a driveway. But we're all going to make the effort because, well, I mean, I'm not going to drive. I'll get someone else to drive for me, and then I can have a drink. But that's the difference. But the whole point being, it's because we've got everybody together, and that experience was so good, we will absolutely go back.
Yeah. So that's the first thing you've got to do, is you absolutely have to give a great experience, and to counter that with a don't. The don't is, don't be greedy. Don't oversubscribe. Don't think I could squeeze an extra table and chairs in here. Or if you're a store, don't, you know, I would encourage people not to create a promotion. Try and encourage people to come down. Don't try and create excess demand. The demand is there. Yeah. You just need to deliver a great experience. You need to, you know, you need to make sure your staff are on point. They're all practiced. They've been off for a while. This is another thing that a lot of people have not been there. They haven't been working. So maybe it means you've got to come in and do a training day or do something just to remind people what that experience should be like, so that when that first customer comes through the door, right the way through to the last customer on that first day, everybody has a great experience and walks away feeling positive about that, and then ultimately thinks, yeah, I was comfortable going out to the shops again. I was comfortable going out to a restaurant again. It was really good. I'm really happy not to fall back on the online shopping or any of those, you know, delivery or whatever else. So that's rule number one.
Rule number one, make it great and don't overpack it.
Absolutely. Number two then, I put here, capture everybody.
Yes.
So you're not going to be able to fit everyone in. If you're following our first rule, then you're not going to be full. You're going to be full, and there might be people that don't get in. So what can we do to try and make the most out of the fact that there is this demand everywhere, and there are people that you know, you're a restaurant, you're taking bookings, but you have only so many tables, so there are people that are going to fall by the wayside. What can we do about that?
It's a combination, because it's not just, it's the people that you can't get in, but it's also the people who do come in. Those that do come in, you need to maybe come back to that one in terms of capturing their information. But for those you can't get in, well, they're probably going to have that problem in a lot of places. And, you know, they can't get you in this week, but you know, you make it clear, well, you can come in next week, and this is an ongoing thing, and actually there's a reason to come back. And really, this whole thing is about giving someone a reason. You know, why would someone give you their information so that you can follow up with them? They only do that if you give them a reason. That could be because they've had a great experience, so people might want to give you their email address or like your Facebook page because, you know, well, I've had a good experience there. I don't mind them telling me some more stuff about what they're doing. But for people who've never had the chance to experience you yet, then give them a reason. Sorry, we're booked because, you know, and make that point. The reason why we're fully booked is because we're not oversubscribing, because we want to make the experience really good for you, make you really comfortable. So, but we will be available next week. And here's a voucher if you want to book and come in next week. And that there's multiple reasons, but you have to give them a reason. This madness that people think they can just, everyone says build a database or, you know, get people to like your Facebook page. You have to give them a reason. People don't just walk around. Less and less nowadays, they're just going to give you their information because people start to understand what it's for.
And it's value. You know? Like it's,
yeah,
it's,
absolutely.
It has value,
data has value. Yeah, 100%. I think people understand. And ever since, I think, the Cambridge Analytica scandal, I'm still not understanding why it was a scandal, but there you go. That's just me. But ever since that was a big news story, people have started to understand that Facebook and Google and everywhere else gathers data, and they understand. They now, you know, people go, oh, actually, no, if I'm going to give you my email address, I know I should get something in return because, you know, my data is valuable because I read about it.
Hmm.
And it's exactly the same, you know, wherever you are, because, you know, Facebook is a prime example where back in the day, everyone just liked everyone's pages because it was a thing people did. And then after a while, you suddenly realised, my feed's just full of rubbish. And you start unliking tons and tons of things. So again, if you want someone to like a page, then give them a reason. People don't just click on it nowadays.
Yeah. I think that's the key there, isn't it? Is actually think about where you want to communicate with people. So it's one thing to ask for, you could ask for an email address, but you could just ask them to like you on social. You could give them a reason for that. So that could be, when we have a late cancellation, we'll put it up so we can encourage you to book, or we'll get in touch with you directly if you give us your mobile number or something like that. So there are a number of different ways you communicate with people, but you just need to think about what that way is going to be and what the way is right for the customer, because that's ultimately the most important thing. It's, you know, one customer might be happy to give you their email address or their phone number, but another one might feel much more comfortable just keeping things on their terms, where they like you on Facebook or Twitter, and then you can communicate with them when they're ready to hear from you. So definitely try and do what you can to capture the information of absolutely everybody when they come through your doors. And I think we're going to be talking a bit more about that next week, about some of the techniques you can use to encourage people to say yes when you ask them if they want to opt into your marketing and things like that. Because the next point, the next don't really is, don't assume that they'll come back. You gave them a great experience. They came in, they had a wonderful time, everything was fabulous, but you still can't assume that they're going to come back again.
No, yeah, I mean, we cited the example earlier on of how we'd had a great experience and that was our first thought, but doesn't mean it will be. And James is quite right. Actually, now when I stop and think about it, and I have to stop and think, we went to a couple of other places where we were at then and we had good experiences on those, but I didn't immediately think, oh, I'm going to go back and rush back there. And neither of those places are in my head right now. I'm not going to name names, but neither of those places have done anything to go, well, we're back all open on the 12th and we'll be doing this. None of that's happened.
Whereas this place
was... gone out of my mind.
As soon as the announcement came out, there was an email saying, we're going to be taking bookings for the outdoors place. It's not ready yet. We don't have them ready now, but we will do soon.
Put it in your mind.
They were there in the head. So I'm like, straight away, okay, they're going to be taking bookings. They'll let me know when it's time. They then, you know, a week or so later, they announced, okay, we're ready to take bookings now. Yes, it completely crashed their website because they were doing a good job, so they had a lot of demand.
Yep.
So then they struggled. But you know what? They made sure they got that sorted out. They took the bookings and they got bookings all sorted out. And that's the thing. It's constant, honest communication.
Yes.
And being front of mind, because everybody, people have got so much choice. They've got so many different things they could potentially do. You just can't assume that your relationship with them is one-to-one and there's just you and they only have eyes for you. There's a pretty decent chance that their wandering eyes will go off to look at some other venue if they've sent them something nice.
There's plenty of us shops and restaurants who've been flirting with them over the last 4 or 5 months. There's no doubt
absolutely
about that.
Absolutely no doubt.
You were looking at me as if to say, don't go there, don't start. Oh, he's done it.
It's all gone a bit intimate.
Yes, okay, well I think we move on to the next one.
Well, the next one I think is really, really important, and it does kind of link to all of those, which is, don't wait for things to settle down before you start marketing. So it looks great now, everything's rosy, you've got bookings well into the end of next week. If you're accommodation, this is probably a little bit further out. So now you're thinking about, you're not open yet, but your bookings are looking pretty rosy through the summer. September's even pretty booked up. But what does it look like in October? What's it looking like towards the end of the year? And what's it looking like next year? You've got to think about, eventually this spike is going to die down. Eventually people will start to go back to normal. People are creatures of habit. So in due course, things will settle down. So you can't wait until that happens before you think, oh, we better do a marketing campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is quite linked to the topic we talked about. I think it was last week or the week before, around the fact that, you know, businesses that survive off referrals, eventually it will dry up, and you don't wait until it dries up before you end up in marketing desperation. And that's really what we're talking about here, is you've got it's a combination. You have to maximize what's happening right now so that you already have a new set of leads that you're generating through self-generation rather than the just automatic demand that's going to happen because everyone hasn't been out for 3 months and they're just desperate to go to any pub in the world. It doesn't matter actually where it is. I'm sure there's some dreadful pubs around me. I'm sure there's dreadful pubs around you, but you'll be stunned how full they will be.
Oh, really, yeah.
But the reality is that's because people will just go anywhere for a period of time. But at some point, they will go back to being choosy.
Yeah.
And when they go back to being choosy, that's where marketing comes in.
So you've got to think about what's coming up. What's coming up through the summer? What's coming up at the end of the summer? What are the events? What are the campaigns you're going to be thinking about? Because I know you're busy now. I know you've got loads of other things you've got to be doing. But it's also really important to think about how you're going to be marketing over the course of the next 6 months. And don't just get so focused on what you've got going on right now and think that's going to last forever. Because the truth is, it probably isn't. And the last thing that we're going to talk about today that you absolutely must do, and it's linked to the marketing thing, is do ask for reviews. It's something that so many businesses, they survive on their reviews, but people don't ask for them, partly because they're sometimes afraid to. Sometimes they just don't want to be too pushy or whatever else. But I think for a lot of customers, they don't always understand how valuable a review is. And I think, I know I've been guilty of that in the past, where I've not left a review. And really, when you realise how much impact leaving a review has on a small business,
yes,
you make the decision, yeah, do you know what, I will leave a review. Because, you know, and I think some of the best marketing I've seen done recently is when someone's come and done a, you know, someone's come and done a delivery or done a service or something like that, and they say, if you leave me this review, it will help me because of this.
100%. Absolutely embrace it. Do not be embarrassed. In actual fact, it's the opposite. Tell people why it's important to you. Don't do it, oh, it'd be really nice if you left us a review. Who cares? Tell them the truth. You know, I'm a small, what we're talking about, most of these things are small independent businesses. And be honest about it and just go, do you know what? As James has brilliantly put, this is exactly what a review can do for me. If you leave me a review and two other people leave me a review, I'm suddenly 20 spaces higher up on TripAdvisor. And as a result, you know, 50 more people a week will come into my restaurant. 50 more people a week means, you know, X thousands of pounds for my business to pay my staff. That whole thing is bringing it alive so that people go, oh yeah, well, that's fine. And there is a whole mentality at the moment about supporting local businesses. So yeah, Don't be ashamed of that. Embrace it, because people want... And the other thing, we've talked about this in the past, people love the idea of being heroes. Like, suddenly going, I discovered this amazing restaurant. Let me tell you all about this amazing restaurant. Oh, you haven't heard about it. Let me give you a review about it. People love being the hero of their own stories. So if they get the chance to tell the world about a restaurant, then absolutely, of course they do. People love doing it. Obviously, they must have had a good experience, because if they haven't, ask them for a review and they're going to tell you that it was a pile of old poop.
Yeah, well, don't, you know, that kind of...
Which is why rule number one, make it a good experience.
Don't... Yeah, when people say to me, and we have this all the time, say, oh, we don't ask for reviews because we might get bad reviews. You need to look at yourself and say, why are you getting bad reviews?
Yes.
If you think that's there's a chance you might get bad reviews, then you need to do a better job. And that may be harsh, but it's just true. And there will always be people with unrealistic expectations. But this is when we always talk about, this is where the branding comes in, where your marketing comes in, is setting the expectation right. Because when you set the expectation right, you'll generally always get good reviews. You'll always deliver more than where you set the expectation. But if you set that expectation too high and you fail to live up to that, it's why 5-star hotels struggle to get amazing reviews, but a really good 4-star will get loads better, because they can over deliver beyond that, whereas the expectation becomes so much higher at that higher level. So set the expectation right, do a great service, deliver a great service.
Maybe deliver rather than do.
Yeah, I agree. And then ask for people to leave you a review. I think that's one of the most valuable marketing things you can do at the moment. People are feeling passionate about helping businesses.
And all of this, what we've been talking about, and without ending and sounding like an absolute bore that we always do, but the reality is, all of this is because you're starting to think like your customer. And that is the single most important thing that we always would end on. You know, if you're going to maximize this period, if you're going to maximize the spike that's going to happen, then you really have to start thinking like your customer, so you can start thinking about how you're going to get them back.
1,000,000%. And that's the thing. Like right now, you might have a spike, you'll have a massive increase in demand, but of all those people, a smaller subset of those people are the ones that are always going to come back loads and loads of times. They're the ones that are recommending you to other people. They're the people that come regularly and spend a lot. And they are your ideal customer. And they're the ones you've really got to start getting your head into. Because as you get better at that, you'll know where more of them are. You'll know how to get more people to do that. You'll know how to appeal to them more efficiently. And that's really what this all comes down to. We talked about knowing which channel to talk to them in. Well, if you think like your customer, you can do that. You'll know how to deliver a great service for them because, again, you know what they expect. You know how to give them a great service. All of these things that we've just talked about are made so much easier when you can get your head right into, well, when you put yourself into your customer's shoes. That's what it's really all about. It's really being able to understand what they want.
Brilliant.
And as it happens, we can help with that as well because we have an ebook. So if you want to, we would love you to head to 33percent.co.uk/customer and you can download it. It's free. Download the ebook. And I really would encourage you to follow through that process. I know you're busy. I know you've got loads of other things to do at the moment. But if you can, now's a great time to do it because you've got those customers in front of you. They're right there. You could ask a couple of questions. Your servers could ask a couple of questions as they're checking out. You could understand a bit more about them. And you might be able to fill out that ideal customer avatar because that is going to massively help your marketing as you go forward into the next few weeks and months.
And if you are struggling for time, we've made it even easier because we put 10 examples and probably half of them you can just rip off and use straight away. So they're there already for you and they'll really help you focus your time because you will be time poor. And the whole point of doing these audience avatars is because they allow you to focus your marketing and they focus your time so you don't waste time on things you shouldn't be doing.
All right. So there you go. Some good good tips there. We'll put them all down in the notes, of course. But we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear how that first sort of couple of weeks has gone. And as we said before, next week we're going to talk a little bit more about how you can get people to give you that data. What are the tricks and the tools that you can use to really encourage them to say yes and say, yes, I'd like to be connected to you and allow you to communicate with me going forward.
Marvellous. Right, well then, let's end with week four of making James the efficiency ninja that he's becoming. You can't see him, but he's doing strange movements as if he's some sort
of karate.
Just
demonstrating how incredibly efficient I am, that's all.
It was an efficient stretch of your arm, yes, very good. And this is a quick one this week, really, but quite an important one. And perfect for this type of medium, because it's all about communication. Communication being an amazing way to be grossly inefficient. I think that's the way I would say it. If you don't communicate well, it's one of those negatives that makes the positive. It's not a case of good communication makes you really, really efficient. Not necessarily, but bad communication makes you incredibly inefficient. And that's why we need to focus. And there's really a couple of sides to this. We talked a lot about becoming more efficient by doing a lot of what I would call routine and basic stuff really, really well and saving yourself time. But actually, good communication is something that can actually make you more efficient in some of those bigger problems. And, you know, the examples would be creative situations, idea generation, content ideas, you're trying to come up with stuff like that, or solving a really difficult problem. What happens often, and obviously is happening more now than ever, is that people are trying to solve problems or generate ideas via email, via messaging services. And it's just a completely inefficient way of working because you don't get your point across. You end up sending as many emails and typing as much as you would if you talked to someone. So really, the big efficiency tip this week is to talk to people more. And then it's not rocket science, but then James has said this a few times, most of the tips are not actually rocket science, but people aren't doing them. So stop using email for everything. Email works in its place. You know, nobody's a bigger advocate of email than me. I've spent 19 years living it. But ultimately, talking more on the phone, talking more on virtual conferencing, and of course now as we start to creep back to being with people face to face and talking, you know, that way, it really does make you more efficient. It's an example of taking a more complex area rather than the basic day-to-day stuff and really making it a much more efficient service. Because, you know, something that's taking you 12 emails, you probably then go ahead and do something and you make a mistake because you haven't fully understand what you're supposed to do. It's all wasting time. In actual fact, you could have picked up the phone or you could have got on a quick call or hopefully eventually face-to-face, have a 5-minute chat and the whole thing's gone. And I think that really is where people become grossly inefficient by not communicating well and then that's where most makes mistakes come from. Mistakes come from bad communication.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of these efficiency tips are often, sometimes they're do a thing, but a lot of the time they're don't do this thing, because these are the things that make you inefficient. Yes. And absolutely, that can be, how many times have you sat there and looked at an email that you've written and tried to make sure that you take, you know, you rewrite it, you make sure it doesn't sound a bit passive aggressive, you make sure that you're being careful about the way you're being phrased. How many times have you read an email and misconstrued the way that the person had spoken to you or something like that? And that doesn't happen when you're on the phone, because you have a conversation. And also, in my experience, people behave better in that situation.
Yes.
So when any bad client relationship that I've ever had has generally come down to the way they send their emails, the sort of the firing off of things late in the evening and whatever else with an aggressive or passive aggressive attitude that leaves you feeling in a bad place. And ultimately, then you scramble around thinking, oh no, what have I done wrong? How do I deal with this? What do I do there? And it creates stress, it creates disorganization, it makes people run around and do things when they maybe shouldn't do, that would all be dealt with by a conversation or a face-to-face meeting.
Yes.
And again, I think you said before about the creative side of things. And this is, I think, probably true now more than ever, as people have stopped going to offices. They've stopped having those communal places of work. And loads of people talk about, hey, you know, do we need to go back to that point? Do we still need to have offices? Could we all just work from home? And I think that there are definitely benefits to that. But one of the worst things is, I don't think you can do anything collaborative or creative to maximum efficiency over Zoom or Teams or any of those things.
Completely agree.
Over the phone, all that stuff. I think that the best creative ideas have ever come when the meeting's kind of gone on for a bit longer than it should have done, when the ideas start to get a bit silly and then you start bouncing stuff around. Whereas I feel like when you're on a call, on a Zoom call or something like that, there comes a point where you stop creating and you start finishing. You start trying to wrap up the conversation.
Yeah.
And it's not usually very long into it. You know, an hour is about it's a bit of a push, isn't it, I think, at that point.
Yeah, there's what happens wherever anything other than a face-to-face, when you're trying to create things from scratch, you lose the fluency. So, and as a result, and we'll talk about this in week 8, but it's almost turning into a form of multitasking, because you do a little bit, then you stop, and then you come back, and you stop, and you come back. And each time you come back, you have to get back into it again. So if you start creating ideas by email or messenger, or even, you know, on a VC, it's so much harder on a VC to stop and talk over people. And I know that sounds really rude, but actually a lot of really good fluent conversation when you're trying to generate ideas and particularly solving problems comes from someone's talking and the other person immediately knows, yes, but I've got something that I'll add to that and go over the top of it, so I'm going to talk over the top of you. And it's okay when you're face to face, but you can't actually really do that when you're on a Zoom call.
No, absolutely. Do you think it's a generational thing, Gary? Do you think that there's a...
Oh, no, you know, we're not going to be like old man in the corner.
We're old fuddy-duddies over here. But, you know, for me, it's the answer's always pick up the phone. I feel like I could have had a T-shirt that said, just pick up the phone. Because the amount of conversations I had...
I'll stop you straight away, because I don't think it's generational, because I'm married to a person who will absolutely never pick up a phone. I mean, to the extent that if I say to her, would you like pizza for dinner tonight? She would say, absolutely. I say, okay, cool. Can you phone up Domino's? No, I will not. Then we won't get pizza. Is there no way I can email them? Okay, Domino's have got an app, so it's a terrible example because she knows she can do it. But if there's a local, so we have, for example, there's a local Chinese that does really, really good. But the only way you can order is by phoning them up. She still won't do it. She will drive to the restaurant and order and then wait for them to cook it, rather than phoning up and then arriving as it's cooked.
Well,
how much she hates getting on a phone.
That doesn't solve the problem. So she's happy to talk to them in person, but not
phone. It's a most bizarre thing.
I think this might be an anomaly here.
I do know quite a few old people who have got to the point they don't like talking on the phone. Right. And the weird thing is, actually, what you'll find is that some people like phones, some people don't. Some people like face-to-face, some people don't. Some people would prefer email, some people... I know a lot of old people now that, since they've discovered the internet, will do everything via email.
Yeah.
Because they never have to talk to people ever again.
I think that's the thing that I think that frustrates me the most, and I think is a massive inefficiency, is that people get the idea that I can fire off a quick email, boom, that's it, done, tick. that's off my list now and it's on someone else's list. But the truth is that if it's like I need answers to a question, it's not really off your list until you've got
just
the answers.
Yeah.
Well, it's like that. You're, because you're ruthlessly efficient, if I send you that email, I will get it straight back and be back in my inbox super quickly. But the point is that for a lot of people, it's like off it goes and then it waits. And you wait whilst you wait for someone to get round to responding to you.
And then eventually you get frustrated because why haven't they come back to me? Well, if it was urgent, and I always say this to people, if someone moans at me saying, oh, they haven't replied to my email yet, if it's that inurgent, pick up the phone.
If your house was on fire, you wouldn't email the fire brigade.
And that old man phrase is the perfect way to end, I feel.
There we go. So, yes, I think that the right piece of communication at the right time makes you more efficient. I like that. Okay, excellent. All right, well, I feel like that's a... That's good for me because I don't feel like I've completely nailed the email stuff from week one, but I definitely feel like I've got a good handle on using the right communication. I do like talking to people on the phone. If anything, I could probably be a little bit more concise in my conversations. Unless
and, rambling. And if nothing else has been learned on this podcast, is that James likes to talk.
I think that's a little bit unfair.
But a great way to end.
Indeed, indeed. Well, thank you very much, as always, for joining us. Come back next week. Again, we're going to be talking about how you can capture more data, how you can get more people onto your lists. And we're going to be talking about week five, efficiency week five. So we're over halfway. You're probably feeling pretty efficient like I am by now. If you'd like to find out a bit more about what we do, you can go to 33%.co.uk. That's all letters, none of the numbers, and you can find out about the courses. As I mentioned before, that workbook is available at 33%/customer, and you can get that absolutely FOC, gratis, no charge.
That's free of charge if you don't get all that.
That is what that means. It is a really great resource, so I hope you have a chance to have a look at that. And until next time, we will see you next week.
Thank you and goodbye.